Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So, are there any other questions that you think that we should tackle?
I think, do you know what, this is your time to talk about...
It's my time. My moment.
Hello, welcome to Banging Book Club, the fortnightly podcast where we read books about sex and gender and talk about it. I'm Hannah Whitten.
I'm Lena Norms.
And I am Lucy Moon.
And this is the very much anticipated, at least anticipated by us.
Yeah.
We have no idea if you've been anticipating
We've been planning this since February. Hannah has been planning this.
In fact,
February.
We've been putting like emotional pressure on Lucy to get a boyfriend so we can do it.
She managed it,
but didn't manage to get him on the podcast.
No.
So in this episode, we got our boyfriends plus Lucy's surrogate boyfriend to read Man Up and talk about it and their masculinities. We're currently at the pub. And the boys are here.
Outdoors in...
We have been at the pub figuring out the 2018 reading list, and by the time that you're listening to this, it will be live, so you can go and to our Twitter, and there'll be a link, and you can find out what we're reading next year. Yay! But, ooh, did you hear those fireworks?
Yeah.
We're outside in November. Shall we just let the boys take it away, then?
Yeah.
Take it away, boys.
Hello, bangers. My name is Lucy Moon.
This is Lena Norms.
And I'm Hannah Whitten.
Obviously. Oh, we're so funny. We're not, actually. This is a male takeover. Man. A masculine takeover of the Banging Book Club, because we are going to be talking about Jake Irwin's Man Up.
Isn't it Jack Irwin?
Jack Irwin, correct.
Of course.
It's like
Hannah
edited
that bit out.
Jake Irwin.
My name is Jazza, and I'm Lucy's stand-in pretend boyfriend for the day. I'm gay, so that's not true, but...
I am Craig, I'm dating Lena, and so I'm taking her place for today.
And I'm Dan, I'm Hannah's boyfriend, and I'll be taking her place today.
Yeah.
Boom.
So, we, first of all, with a Banging Book Club tradition, we have to give it a sound review. I don't know if you guys have given this very much thought.
Do we not do this
beforehand.
At the end?
No, it's at the very
beginning. This is the beginning.
It's the beginning, yeah. So we have to give this book a sound review. Craig, can you... give us a little bit of a taster, yeah.
Oh man, I don't know what kind of thing that they've done before. We might be like repeating some sound reviews from before. But
a lot of them are quite moany.
Moany.
Like,
okay. Just trying to think. So with me, I was like looking at all my notes from this book. I'm like, that's my sound review.
Cool. I like it, Dan.
I was more like,
the fury.
Oh, dear. That sounds like some suppressed masculinity there.
Could have been interpreted another way.
Yeah. For me, it was kind of like a...
Well done.
You put
Jake.
So much more thought into yours than I have.
I have been practicing that on the train down. That, by the way, listeners, was me sighing and slow clapping. We, in this book... he kind of concludes at the end, his last section states that masculinity isn't in crisis, it's just confused. What do you think about that statement? First of all, is there like a masculinity crisis? Or is it like something that we can fix relatively easily?
Oh man, I think that he's grossly oversimplifying that by saying that it's just confused. I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. It's just there's obviously a problem, isn't it? And I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to say like, hey, this is a fixable kind of thing. And he's trying, but you know, in terms of, I don't know. What do you think?
For me, I think it's the speed of change in the last 50 years has been quite rapid, certainly more so than previously in history. And I think it's just
in terms of like the role of men.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a bit of lag in terms of, you know, culture catching up to the modern world. And I think it's not just masculinity where there's a problem. There's a whole wide range of issues where that's the case.
So what I think this book is actually quite good at is identifying the problems within modern Western ideas of masculinity. He's identified kind of like the symptoms, which are high suicide rates. I believe with men under the age of 45, suicide is now the biggest killer. Now have a sexist misogynist as the most powerful man in the world. Like, there are lots of very clear symptoms, but we don't really know how to treat them. Do you think that Jack Irwin has kind of helped us out in trying to figure out anything that we could do to solve the apparent problem that we have?
Yeah. Situation. I think he hits on some good points at the end when he's got a bit of a summary going on, hasn't he? Where he's like, these are the ways in which it's beneficial to dudes. And he's basically said, like, I know that it's not the best thing in the world offering a solution to people and being like, look, it benefits you too. And it's, what is it that he says? It's like, doing the right thing for the wrong reasons is better than doing nothing at all or something like that.
Sure.
Something like that. Again, I mean, I think it does appeal to lots, like it could appeal to a lot of people that might not necessarily have a lot of knowledge around the subject. But I mean, I think that that's a good way of looking at it, of framing it. It's like, okay, this is beneficial to everybody, and look, you can have better relationships with people, you feel better, you probably aren't as susceptible to death.
Dying. He talks about death an awful lot in this book. So he was commissioned to write this after he wrote an article in Vice that went viral, which actually is really good. It was called Silence is Killing British Men.
Something.
It is actually it's about 800 to 1,000 words. It's quite small.
It's not a whole book.
It's not a whole book. And I think that's one of the problems with this book is that he had a really great article and then has kind of tried to increase the word count of said article. And it isn't really possible to turn an article of under 1,000 words into a 20,000... Like, this is about a 200-page
book. Subject matter of the book, is it similar to the article? Is it basically, like, he touches on all the same
points?
It's
basically the same.
More or less. So he has sections in here where he talks about LGBT issues, which isn't in the article at all. We can talk about that chapter later on.
Yes.
I have feelings about it. Dan, what did you think? Do you think that he gives us any effective remedies to the apparent masculinity crisis that we've got?
No.
Yeah.
But
fine. So,
but I think actually the good that it did do was done with the initial article, which was actually beginning that discussion and getting people talking about it, because that article went enormous and it was shared all over the place. And I mean, I was still in the army at the time, and even in there, like, the guys were, have you read this? It had a massive impact.
Yeah.
So,
in that kind of vein, because I think one of the really great things about his article in 2014 was the fact that it was incredibly accessible. It kind of used the framing of the death of his father as a kind of entry point into it. Used really dark but funny humour to talk about this problem that British men, but also men across the world, have. And it felt to me really clear who that article was for.
Yeah.
That was for the people who end up being affected most negatively bi masculinity, and those are the people that would probably never use the word masculinity in their day to day. Like I'm a queer academic. I use like the concepts of masculinity hourly. But that article wasn't for me. I still thought it was great, but this was a great way of kind of like a splash page into talking about the problems that we have. Do you think that this book does a similar thing? Do you think it's accessible enough for the audience that needs to hear it?
See, I think one of the main problems with the book was more of a case of if you're going to expand that article, ultimately what you need to do is include a lot more research and a lot more in-depth analysis. But when you do that, then it becomes an academic book and then you alienate that audience.
Yeah.
But by not doing that, what he's done is hasn't really expanded a huge amount on the original article, I think.
You're a bit more forgiving than myself and Dan, right, Craig, in this vein?
I mean, I liked the book, but I definitely hear what you're saying about, I think that this, as an issue, it needs to be something that's simple and easy and cool, and I think that this book kind of feels like it overcomplicates a lot of things, or at least oversimplifies things and repeats itself, you know?
It somehow manages to overcomplicate but also oversimplify this whole conversation.
See, one thing I said to you before we started was I think the thing that makes it confusing is it does jump a lot. There's one point I remember specifically where he sort of opens up with the title of "We are now going to talk about men's rights activists." And then after sort of a page of that, changes his mind, talks about something else for four pages, but then about three, four chapters later, comes back to it and does a sort of six-page bit on male rights activists. Yeah. Now, why were those two bits not together?
Yeah.
There's a lot of formatting which I think could have made it easier to understand.
So, like I said, I'm an academic. Like, I study gender things. And so I was really frustrated that in a 200-page book, there are, I believe, 43 citations in the whole thing. And then when there are citations, like stuff that backs up his argument, scientifically or anecdotally, or there's legal cases that he talks about, when he does cite these things that have happened, he cites tweets, Daily Mail articles, summaries of things that have happened from The Guardian and stuff, and all things that are basically on the front page of Google when you search for masculinity. And I found that really, really frustrating, because he is talking about his perception of things, and this is a very white, middle class kind of like perspective on masculinity. He says at the beginning that he doesn't want it to be, but inevitably it has ended up being so because he hasn't really done a huge amount of research into the demographics that he doesn't tick. There is nothing about masculinity in black and Asian communities, which I found a bit shocking. He's got a couple of interviews with the LGBT community, which actually I think are some of the best bits of the book, but they're very small parts of it. There's one part actually that fucking really, it really, really irks me. So he talks about trans participation in the army, talks about the fact that trans people, he thinks, he would assume, would be turned off of serving in the army because of the large, the hyper-masculinity that exists there. And then you can talk to this a little bit later. But he says, oh yeah, I don't think trans people would therefore want to serve their country. And trans people, in the US at least, serve at nearly twice the rate of cisgender people. Really? And it was just like, you've just had a hunch and said something that is wrong, and that it really fucking annoyed me, because you could have googled that. I in fact googled it, checked it, and found it out in 10 minutes.
That's pretty shit. I think he's tried to adopt this sort of he's tried too hard to adopt this colloquial tone, but he hasn't gotten the balance right, so everything's just a bit like, oh, I don't know, I don't fucking know, maybe this is a like, just throwing some ideas out there. But I think that's his way that he's trying to, like, get through to some people and just be, but, you know, again, he's missing facts.
Yeah, the style was a deliberate choice. Actually, he says that at the start.
I don't mind the style.
I do agree that it's more research could have been done in certain areas. But, well, I'm sure we'll cover that as we get on to discussing some of the the points.
Yeah, well, one of his chapters is about life in the military, and seeing as the most military stuff that I've done was like a couple of terms of combined cadet force at school, I feel like you're probably the best person to speak to this, Dan.
Yeah, so I so I should probably give a bit of background. So I left the army recently after being in for about 6 and a bit years. And reading the military section was painful in places. I think it was really good. And I think what you spoke about, transgender people in the armed forces. I met quite a few transgender people during my time in the armed forces. And there also seems to be this assumption about the military driving this like hyper-masculinity, which I don't think is necessarily fair. Well, one of the things you have to think about when it comes to the armed forces is the kind of people that tend to join the armed forces. And I think one of the great things about the armed forces is it tends to give people purpose that maybe are otherwise struggling. And maybe that feeds into why more transgender people go into there. Maybe, you know, it gives them purpose they were lacking otherwise. And that's what happens with a lot of working class lads as well. A lot of working class lads in the armed forces. And I feel that the attitude, the view that the outside of the armed forces has of the armed forces are very different to what the armed forces are actually like. So the main thing that annoyed me was how he compared people who go out and commit mass shootings and professional members of the armed forces.
He kind of conflated the gun debate in the US with, like, it was all in the same chapter, and it was all kind of under violence in masculinity, but doesn't really have a nuance to
Be on it. So what the way he discussed it was that in America there is a large amount of militarization that's happening with civilians, where but militarization isn't handing someone an assault rifle. That what goes into creating a soldier is very different. There's a lot of it is disciplined professionalism. And they're the areas that the armed forces gives you, which it doesn't talk about. And it doesn't talk about the positive aspect that that can have on somebody's life. And I can understand where the confusion comes, because some of the things that are considered important for the armed forces. So in the armed forces, there is a focus on being able to control your emotions, because I'm sure, as you can imagine, it is quite helpful in some of the situations you find in. And equally, you can see a parallel with that in the idea of masculinity. But I don't think that the armed forces then says no one can ever have any emotions ever.
Is he framing it in a way that it's like they just tell you to repress it and that's it, whereas actually
I may be reading into it more than what he says, but that was the kind of feel that I got. It was very much like there's this hyper masculine culture, so it's completely alienates people who aren't men, basically.
So like I have minimal experience with kind of like the real armed forces. Like I used to do school stuff, but everybody I know who has served in some way, shape or form has talked about the positivity of kind of like camaraderie and like structure that it has given them, and a sense of responsibility and all of those kinds of things. And that's not to say that there aren't bad things that end up happening when you have a very male focused culture around like the armed forces, but he seems to be like, and therefore, and this is kind of like indicative of all of the violence that men do, and I'm like this is kind of like he reckons that, again, it's him just having like jumped to this conclusion without having actually considered an awful lot of evidence.
And I mean what my experience of the armed forces, that's probably the best way to frame it. So I can only say some of the conversations that I've had with my friends, other people that I worked with in the armed forces, I had some of the most like frank, open conversations about emotions and all that kind of stuff that comes because you live so close together and those bonds are so close that there is that discussion and it does happen. Whereas I feel in that book it's it does frame the military in quite a bad light and ignores some of the really positive elements there are to that that environment in the army.
For me as well, like as the token gay. So he has a whole chapter where he talks about how masculinity affects LGBT people and women. But it seems actually, I found it quite frustrating because it is so, there are like moments of actually really good quotes from the people that he's interviewed, talking about how there is this non-binary person who he interviewed, and they were talking about how they were asked to be more professional in like a work setting, and professional meant adhering to a specific gender, and adhering to the gender binary where this person is like exists somewhere in between. And I think that that was a really interesting conversation to have. But then the rest of that chapter seems to be straight men being called gay at school makes them violent. And I'm like, I found that very frustrating, because I see an awful lot of negative masculinity in gay culture, where there is very much a hierarchy, especially in certain anonymous dating apps, where there is this mantra of mask for mask, like masculine presenting men will only be attracted to other masculine presenting men, and people who are passive in their sexual preferences and people who are effeminate in any way are seen as lesser and as kind of like a blemish on the gay kind of like movement, because they're stopping us from being able to be accepted by wider like cis normative heteronormative culture. And he hasn't acknowledged that gay people also have, like, gay cis men especially have this role that they feel like they need to play, often to a further extent than their straight counterparts. And he keeps on again coming to these conclusions that are, I think, just wrong, that where he says stuff like, gay men probably don't feel like they have to be as masculine as their straight counterparts. And I'm like, well, talk to one, and then maybe you'll know that this isn't true. And like, it's just like another example of him having a section where he's come to this conclusion. It was so frustrating, because I think that he has really good like title headings for all of his chapters.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, I cannot wait to talk about like toxic masculinity in queer culture. That's a really interesting topic. And then he just pisses the whole thing up the wall. But anyway,
was there
anything that you hated, Craig?
Or maybe you want to be more positive.
Yeah, you're allowed to. You're 100% allowed to be.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I went in to reading the book with more of a like, okay, what can I learn from this kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I definitely did go in with that.
I tried.
Yeah. So I think I did enjoy reading it, and I enjoyed a lot. Well, I didn't enjoy, but I found a lot of what he was saying really interesting. I'm just trying to think of things. I can't think of anything that like really like pissed me off. There were the things that I found like particularly interesting. There's a bit in the middle, going back a little bit to the stuff that you're talking about, like the military and what have you, where he was talking. I thought it was a bit of like a broad sweeping statement, but he kind of attributed emotional repression down to like the first two world wars.
I've got something to say on that actually.
Really? That's actually one of his conclusions that I think is the most insightful, and that's one of his main. I think so, and I think that that's one of the things that you get out of his Vice article from a couple of years ago. That was one of the things that it's like, oh yeah, like our dads were raised by fathers who came back from the war and were not supported with their mental health.
True.
And I think that for me anyway resonated big time.
I do that, but ultimately I think the problem with masculinity goes back far further than that. I think there was already before then that thing with the stiff upper lip in England already massively embedded in the culture.
It's even a poster, right? Keep calm, carry on.
Exactly. But yeah. even before the wars, that was a massive part of British culture. And that really was all through the development of the British Empire. That was the attitude that was taken, and there was a very clear idea of the British gentleman all through the creation of the Empire. So it wasn't something that came out of the First and Second World Wars. And you can trace it back further. You can actually look at, I think, the idea of what a man should be from a sort of a religious standpoint even before that. You can look back to how knights used to act. And their code is pretty much toxic masculinity as taught by the military. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really old creed, and I think...
What do you count of as toxic masculinity in that particular sense?
Yeah, maybe the wrong term. But
I think that he uses it as well. I think he uses, and I think in general, we use the phrase toxic masculinity to just mean masculinity.
Which is what I'm doing right now, because I'm using it in the context of how he's talking about in the book. So I'm talking about things like the emotional suppression side of things. Obviously, looking at like chivalry as an old thing, but that's an interesting one. But I think that sort of stoic emotional suppression is the key point of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something I know I'm guilty of myself, but I'm sure we'll come back to that.
Yeah. Do you think, I kind of wanted to talk about this later, but I'm happy to do it now if you guys are. Do you guys think that there's anything, because he is so, I almost feel like he's virtue signalling throughout this whole book, but doesn't really understand the concept that he's talking about. So he just says, feminism, and you should do feminism because it's good for ladies, and that's a nice thing to do, isn't it? Okay, bye.
Feminism is good.
Yeah, and it's
tick.
And it's so surface level, and I feel lacks understanding. Mm. And I think he does the same thing when talking about masculinity. Mm. I think when he says toxic masculinity, he means all male traits. That's sometimes how I interpret it in the book.
I don't know.
Is there anything that we can have, that we can get from masculinity that is positive? Is there such a thing as positive masculinity?
I think it depends how heavily you apply it, doesn't it? I think it's the same as anything. It's the extremes that then do the damage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you would agree with that. So there's like that element of... I mean, I actually do believe there is an element of having a good amount of emotional control can be beneficial. Maybe that comes from my armed forces background. Yeah. But, you know, I think those things can be positive.
I think the same thing, but that's because I really like mindfulness.
But
I'm an emotional wreck everywhere. Just like crying and puppy walking past.
Beautiful.
But yeah, I do think there is a definitely a positive element to it.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say it is the degree that you apply it for me.
I found it really interesting what he was saying about like feminism and how masculinity and reteaching guys, well, not reteaching, but teaching guys like different things to do is a way of accessing that. Mm-hmm. I think there's a bit where he's talking about feminism and a lot of guys are like, ugh, this kind of word that guys kind of, you know, I went out with one of my mates the other day and I was like, so what do you know about feminism kind of thing? It's like, ugh, feminism kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think that the way that he says, right, guys have got, like, guys listen to other guys, right? So if you can talk to one of your mates,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it just takes one guy, you plant the seeds, you break the cycle, you know, if you stop policing your mates.
Mm-hmm. He basically says if we want change, then men need to talk to other men more about these issues and how they're affected by them, right?
And I think that, you know, he hits on a really important thing there, because I think that's the key to accessing these things that people are talking about. That are important to move forward in our society.
I think the most difficult problem with that, though, is that men do talk less generally.
Yeah.
Which is, because there's that classic statistic, but I don't know how true it is, of like men and women comparatively how much we talk.
Yeah, how many words they say. Yeah, I don't necessarily buy that.
It
feels
one.
A bit cosmopolitan.
It does. That's always, I always think, how did you actually measure that?
I've yet to see the actual study.
Yeah, it's one of those things you always just see quoted in places. But yeah, but I do think there is an element of quality of conversation as well, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think men's conversation can sometimes be more trivial, perhaps, and not want to touch on emotional things so much. I look at girls and they seem to have these conversations and they'll cry and I just...
But this is the thing I think about my problem with the whole thing of masculinity being negative. We are not going to be able to stop men from being masculine.
Yeah.
There is a huge amount of gender is performative, but a lot of these characteristics are either ingrained to us from birth because of the way that we're raised, or they are specific to the hormones that are flowing around our body.
Yep.
And culturally, if men are less likely to talk to one another, then it actually... then perhaps telling men to go against the way that they've been raised and their nature isn't necessarily the best way of fixing this toxic masculinity. Perhaps we need to find a way of getting men to be able to release, have a release valve for stuff like stress and stuff like social pressures and anger and all of those kinds of things that is good for them, rather than just saying, guys, you need to get in touch with your feminine side. Because loads of guys just aren't comfortable getting in touch with their feminine side. And I'm frustrated and shocked that there hasn't kind of been an answer to that. I don't know anybody who's really suggesting a masculine, in quotation marks, way of dealing with toxic masculinity. Everybody seems to be saying that men need to embrace their femininity more.
I think that
just means that we're going to leave behind those that are most affected by the most harsh points of masculinity in our society.
What's the bit he says at the end? There's a bit, you quoted it earlier, didn't you? You were like, there's a bit where he's like, oh, it doesn't mean that football is going to be out of the
it made me so angry. So he's, throughout this whole book, he talks about queer stuff and feminism and all of that kind of stuff. And it feels like he's trying to make it so that men can kind of embrace these less masculine sides of themselves. And then the last, third of a page of the actual book, he says, now it's not time for men to prove that they can do anything a woman can do. Our dicks won't fall off, football won't cease to exist, and no one's going to force you to waltz around in a frilly dress and high heels. But nor will women judge you, and that's what you, if that's what you want to do. And I'm like, you've just undone everything that you've been talking about in this book. I feel like he wrote that first, and then kind of went on a journey from the beginning of the book
Maybe. Yeah, it does seem a bit funny because he does actually earlier on in that book say how he's talking about it in the context of feminists who then go out and make a joke about, it's because you've got a small dick, which is, and how actually that can be unhelpful in the long term. And then he then goes and does it at the end of the book, basically.
And it's not the size of the dick, everybody. It's what you do with it.
The motion of the ocean.
It's not the size of the boat, it's the motion of the ocean. Do you think that this... I kind of asked this before, but I'd like us to drill down a little bit on it. Do you think that this is actually going to... is a book that people who need to read it are going to read and finish?
No.
I'm really interested in the subject matter, and I found it very difficult. I probably wouldn't have finished it had we not been doing this.
What was it that made it difficult?
It's basically... touched on it already, but he just sort of like dips into a subject and then dips out again and is like, what about this, what's over here, let's explore this. And it's whilst he's trying to be fun and funny, it sort of complicates the argument. I think it needs to be clear and it needs to be simple,
but then he isn't consistently funny. I find that a real problem with
some of the jokes
stuff.
do fall a bit flat.
I understand you can't make jokes about kind of like violence and rape and those kinds of things. I understand that. But even when he is talking about lighter topics to do with masculinity, it's like, here are some really serious opinions about this topic. Isn't that right, lads? And that's kind of that's how the whole thing reads. It's like, then there's a punchline of, his writing style really, really...
It's unhelpful.
I mean, the problem with these kind of books, in a way... Not, and it's not just it, but I feel like books that, quite often books written around subjects like masculinity, for example, will be read by people who've already kind of got some ideas about it and
are
probably in a good position. The people who need to read that, and I can think of people that I know from Walks My Life, and I go, if I handed that to them, they'd just be like, fuck off. It's not going to happen.
I feel like it's too shallow and not... kind of like well-researched enough to be a significant kind of like queer, not necessarily queer, sorry, but like a gender studies, a study on gender. It's not an academic book, and he doesn't want it to be an academic book, and I think that's fine. But then he starts using language like men's rights activist and barely explains what that actually means and what the consequences of that is.
There's an assumption in there already that
And also that you and also that you understand what feminism is, and you don't need it to be explained to you. And you understand what toxic masculinity is and how that is relevant to you and all those kinds of things. Mm. And every time he introduces one of those concepts without making it accessible to the people who really need to hear it, and frankly, that's the reason that he was probably commissioned to write this book, is because that Vice article was a fantastic way of getting people to talk about mental health in men, because it didn't virtue signal. It was funny, it had dark humour, and it talked about something that nobody was talking about. Whereas it feels like half of the time he's almost apologising for talking about masculinity and kind of says, oh, obviously women have it worse, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yes, but you're going to lose people who needs to hear this along the way if you start explaining it like that. And I feel like people aren't going to get past like the first couple of chapters if they actually are from the demographic that need to listen to him.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's very true.
Also
the
cover's
shit, so who's going to pick that up?
The cover is kind of like a sick green. But also, like, all the way through, again, on his writing style, it feels like, you know when you get, like, an essay deadline and you've got to write 2,500 words on the history of vases in Qing Dynasty China, and you're like, I've got this, this is great. You've written about 1,000 words, and then you suddenly realise you've run out of things to say. And then you're just like, maybe I'll just repeat what I said earlier in a different way. And then maybe I'll kind of just, I'll use a longer sentence structure. You know what will make this really good? A quote from somebody else that's 3 pages long.
Loving quotes.
And it feels so much like he's chasing a word count and doesn't actually care what he's writing about. Mm. And especially towards the end of the book, there's like one chapter where I think about a third of the pages are quotes from other people's work. Now, it's all very well quoting from other people, but you're basically lifting and pasting and plagiarising other people's work, even though you're, like, citing them. It felt very unprofessional to me.
Mm. There's another book on masculinity that I read is The Descent of Man by Grayson Perry. And about a third of this size, he hits on all the same things, but he just gets to the point, it's like, all right, here's the fucking issues, here's how we deal with it, off you go, like, kind of thing. And I think, I think that he just doesn't waffle, like, in this book.
What are kind of, like, positive key takeaways that we have for this? But, like, was there anything new that you learned or that you thought about that you hadn't necessarily thought about before?
I found the bit at the beginning very interesting, where he's talking about, because, like, the argument about, like, oh, masculinity is this natural thing, it's always going to be the way things are and stuff, and he sort of, in quite a, again, quite a general way, sort of debunks that a bit. It's like, really? What, when were we hunter-gatherers?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Thousands of years ago. That's really relevant now, is it? Like, I found that quite interesting, and it's, whilst it's not academic or anything like that, it's always something that I've been like, well, yeah, what is the answer to that?
See, my point on that one always, I kind of liked where he was going with that, but I didn't necessarily like how he made the point. Because I think in that bit of the book, he really does steer away. He goes, genetics should just be ignored almost entirely, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas my way of always thinking about that problem of, you know, what our genetics do, is accept that perhaps we are this way genetically.
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing about being a human is you are not beholden to your genetics, mm-hmm. as we have this consciousness.
I think that does get shut down, like the whole biological argument, does get shut down an awful lot because it's used in such a, for want of a better word, toxic way. People who say that women are predisposed to be in the kitchen and look after children because of their biology and stuff nonsense. Like that. But there is some truth to, I think, our predispositions to be certain ways because of the hormones that are pumping around our body. Exactly. And those can change. And like as we get older and as we grow, or even a hormone replacement therapy. But it's, there's kind of like that. In general, there's a lack of nuance about the way that we talk about that biological determinism and the performative side of like gender.
Yeah. And for me, it very much is that you can be your own person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want to be beholden to whatever it is that you were assigned?
And actually, to his credit, I think that's part of his message here. I think it's such a... He tries to get somebody from lad down the pub to social justice warrior in 200 pages.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't think that that's possible.
No.
And perhaps, I don't think he really had a clear idea of who his audience was for this, and just wanted a pat on the back by the people who did end up reading it, who were already converted and have the ideals that he talks about in this book.
Yeah.
And in many ways, that is actually a real shame.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of, it could have been more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the question is then, even if it had been more targeted at the people who really need to read it, how would you get them to read it?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah.
Sick.
But yeah, positives for it. It did make me think about it.
I think he's really good at that. He's good at identifying the problems with masculinity in the modern age.
Yeah.
But then waffles about each of them and dances around the subject without actually giving us any conclusions.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Although, to be fair, how easy is it to give conclusions to these? Because it's a very messy topic.
Mm-hmm.
It's tricky. Some good shit about gender in there, though. It's like... gender assigned at birth, like roles and conditioning and stuff like that. That's some good stuff.
So at the very beginning, he kind of sets out his stool and explains gender expression and the difference between sexual preference and sexual preference, but like sexuality and gender and all of those kinds of things. And I think that is actually the best bit of the book, but it is right at the beginning. It's like the first...
It's all down here downhill from here.
It really is. It's like the first 20 or so pages are about that. I'm disappointed that this didn't give us kind of like more...
What's your own experience with masculinity?
Who's starting? Shall I start?
Yeah, go on.
I mean, I'm just trying to think. What has my experience of masculinity been?
Yeah, I felt like I should have prepared.
I don't know. I don't feel like I'm that traditionally masculine as a dude. It's weird. I definitely felt the pressures and stuff at school and people ridiculing you for acting in a certain way. But for some reason, I don't know, I've just been like, whatever. I don't know. I don't know whether it was because... of growing up with like my mum and my sister really close to me and close to my dad or anything like that. But yeah, for me, it's definitely something that is there at every corner, and everyone tries. Even now, like, you know, I go to work with nail varnish on or whatever, and the guy's like, "What are you doing that for?" Like this whole like, and I'm like, "You know, I think it looks great." And it's sort of, I love that people get frustrated by little things like that, and it's really.
What is it that makes you like their reaction to that? Do you feel like you're pushing the envelope a little bit, perhaps?
No, I don't think I'm like pushing the envelope. I just like, I don't know. I guess I like that people are like, "Oh, that's a thing that a guy is doing. I wonder why he's doing that." Uh-huh. And, I don't know. I don't really know what my answer to that is. It just gives me a little thrill when I'm like, mm-hmm. "Yeah, this guy doesn't like it. Great." Maybe I'm just like, I'm just such a nonconformist and so MD. Like,
And I'll ask this to both of you guys: have you ever felt restricted by by masculinity or your filter? Have you ever felt like you needed to like ham up the man, lad side of you?
Yeah, it's definitely a switch that you turn on when you're around certain people, uh-huh. for sure. Definitely when I go back home, speak to my mates from back home, I'm like, "How you doing, geezer? All right?" And you've got I don't know, that like they expect that from you.
Are you from the East End of the 1940s?
You know what I mean. Yeah. So I grew up in like Crawley, and everyone's just a bit like, you know, it's like the guy thing, and you know that it's all fictitious as well, because you know, there's certain friends that I've got that, you know, you've spoken about all sorts of deep emotional things like that. But also it's just this front that everyone, you know, for some reason has to put on. I don't know. And as well in work contexts, when you're meeting people that you don't work directly with, you know, you've got to, that's what I feel like anyways. I don't feel like when you're at like networking events and things like that, I feel like I've got to be like, "Hello, how are you doing?" Because I want to be like, "Hey, girl."
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, that's how I would like naturally sort of be with my mates or like with someone that's meeting for the first time.
That was one of the revelations actually from the book that, like I said it before, but that really kind of made me realise, oh yeah, when I'm being professional, I go like super cis het normative man.
"How do you do, sir?"
"Hello, good sir." "Good morrow. What does the weather do?" And all of that kind of stuff.
It's quite funny, actually. I think when I was younger, I wasn't particularly masculine at all. Like, I was never...
Like, what age?
I was never, like primary school.
Yeah.
Like, primary school. Probably early part of secondary school, really.
Did you rock the emo fringe?
Yeah, but like I, you know, I wasn't interested in sports. Mm-hmm. I never have been. And then when I went to secondary school, I really liked doing like drama, and I used to love singing. And I remember one time, I remember one time like doing drama. I used to absolutely love it. And there was this like really aggressive masculine guy that was in, like, I didn't know why he was in our drama class anyway, but he used to bully me horrendously for just liking acting, you know what I mean?
And fucking bizarre, isn't it, that it's like, and he has an interest,
he's like, you must like it, you chose, because this was year 10, so he'd chosen it as a GCSE, like, why are you here then? But he used to bully me all the time for that. And in many ways, I think that could actually be something to do with sort of when I really, because now I'm much more masculine, you'd probably say, than I was back then.
Do you think that the military had anything to do with that, with the way that you kind of present yourself?
Probably, yeah. So that was really the start of it.
I've planted a seed that you can bring up in therapy years later.
And I think, you know, and then I joined the military after finishing college.
Yeah.
And by that time, I'd already stopped doing all the like drama, singing, acting, focused much more on more, you know, because they weren't traditional things. And at that point, I was already doing the real emotional suppression stuff. You know, I'm very guilty of not talking about feelings, not going to the doctor when you're ill. That is me in a nutshell. Yeah.
I do feel that about the doctors sometimes. I'm like, oh, God, I can't go to the fucking doctor.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I just don't like asking for help, I suppose, is really what it comes down to.
You don't have to answer this, but are there any times when that lack of desire to kind of like seek out help have like had a negative effect on you and helped your evil physical or mental health?
I had a girlfriend who'd cheated on me, and we went on to break up, but it was for quite a while, and
we're actually still together.
Jump with Tanner.
And I didn't tell anyone. Mm. We'd broken up, and my family didn't know.
Didn't tell your friends.
4 or 5 months. My friend, one of my friends knew, but I just didn't speak about it. I was just too embarrassed by what had gone on. And I didn't say anything. And it was really, really difficult. But at that time, I was just like, no, I'll just deal with this myself. Like, I don't want to have to go out and ask for help. Mm-hmm. Which actually, now I look at it and I think, Dan, that's so stupid. But
I do relate to that, though, because whilst I feel like I... like I'll cry at whatever. You know, if someone said something mean to me, I'll cry about it. Whatever. I do also feel that there's that little voice that's like, "Fuck are you doing? Step the fuck up, mate." So yeah, I do definitely feel that. Although, it's a little voice, but I do resist it. But it's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I suppose sort of being in the military, though, I think there is an element in it of suppressing weakness. Mm-hmm. Because it is a hard and fast environment at times, so there is that element of suppressing weakness, and you have to be strong and resilient.
But was there also a lot of support around?
But there is the support there. Sometimes people want to go for it, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And I think the one of the most important things is recognizing when the people around you do need help and asking questions. And I suppose that brings me to quite a nice point. And I think one of the best things we can do as men is actually asking each other good questions. Mm. Maybe they'll answer you, maybe they won't. But at least if you're asking questions, people are much more likely to give you an answer than come and say, "I've got this problem." Mm-hmm, if you ask them honestly, I think people will give you answers. Mm-hmm.
And providing a good platform and just, necessarily that, but just being like, by the way, you can talk about this stuff.
Exactly. With your mates. It's that, like, not having to go up and burden someone with it, which is normally what stops me, actually, is probably not wanting to go to you and say, I've got this really, this problem, when you haven't asked for that to be put on you. But if somebody asks you a question, then I suppose it's a lot
easier. And it kind of comes back to what we were saying about women being more likely to talk about their feelings than men, because they are so used to talking about that kind of stuff on the regular. Whereas when, kind of, if you have a relationship with another guy, the topic of your conversation is very rarely going to be your feelings about something.
Yeah.
Because it's just not what men are conditioned to talk about. Mm. And so it's harder to ask for help to ask those questions.
Yeah, I suppose it's that question, is that I don't think I've ever heard one of my male friends saying, me go, "This happened to me recently," and then go, "How are you feeling about that?" Mm-hmm. No one has ever asked, and I don't, that very rarely happens, I think. And I think that is one thing that would be really useful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jazza. Me and masculinity.
Tell us.
Come on, Jazz.
I've got a weird... So, as I said, I'm one of the gays. One of those. I have a really complicated history with, like, my gender and my gender expression. So when I was a young kid... I was bullied quite heavily for being very loud, attention seeking. I was thoroughly uninterested in guys. I hung out with girls because of that. I don't think I'm trans. In fact, I'm sure I'm not trans. But I used to say that I was a girl in a boy's body because all of my friends were girls. That led to me being bullied so severely that I had to leave my primary school and get transferred to another school. And then kind of became very much a recluse that had zero gender expression whatsoever until I was about 13. And then everybody started doing the race to lose their virginity. Like, that was when the starting gun was fired at the age of 13.
The race.
The race. And you had to lose your virginity before 16, because 16 is, like, the legal age in the
UK. That's the target, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous. I don't know how... Yeah.
And I was actually in... I have always... You always know you're gay. At least I did. I used to... I'm not sure what I kind of cottoned onto when I was growing up, but I knew that being gay was not something I wanted to do. And so I used to, that thing where people wear a rubber band around themselves, and when they have a negative thought, they ping themselves so they stop having a negative thought. I did that with, like, my attraction to guys. So I had a rubber band around my wrist and would, like, try and... It's shock therapy. I would shock therapy myself into trying to not fancy guys, and I would do a whole range of things to try and stop myself from being a gay. And one of the ways that I tried to do this was by being one of the first guys to lose their virginity in my year. I was 15, just turned 15 years old. Realised that sex with the ladies was fine, but not for me. And so I came out about, openly to everybody about 17. But then I was adamant that I wasn't going to be one of those gays. And so I wanted to be the kind of gay guy that you could go down the pub with, and I wasn't going to be camp. Oh, I hate camp guys. I was very much in that, in that genre of, like a young person struggling with their sexuality and gender identity, and then continued with that very, like it was me externalizing my internalized homophobia, until I graduated university, and it like negatively affected relationships that I had. I withdrew myself from things that probably would have been really good for me at the time. Stuff like joining queer societies, getting to know more gay people. I got to the age of like 23 and I didn't know any other gay people. Yeah. Because I was one of the cool gays who hung out with straight people. I don't go to gay clubs. Oh, gay clubs are gross. Ugh. And then I'm not sure what it was, but then eventually I came to the realisation that I stopped giving a fuck what people thought about the way that I presented myself. And also I came to the realisation that I'm really lucky with the dad that I have, because, surprise, he's straight, but he is one of the campest and most flamboyant people I know. Mm. Has made it so clear that, like, he loves me, because his granddad is... And my granddad, his dad, is just incapable of showing any kind of external emotion. I don't think, ever told my dad that he loves him. And my dad was like, I'm going to be the opposite of that. And so I was always made really clear that I was loved. My parents, when I was younger, always bought me, like, My Little Ponies and Barbies, as well as the action figures and the Power Ranger toys. Because they didn't want me to have kind of like the same experience that my dad had when he was growing up. And I stopped giving a fuck and started looking at my dad and seeing how silly and stupid he was with like the way that he would like be camp and dress and all of that kind of stuff. And really embraced a queerer gender identity that I think I express now. Mm. If you had seen me, like, there were videos of me dancing around on the internet in a dress and lipstick, I would have... I would have been disgusted by that when I was younger. But it's so much fun to fuck around with. I'm as cisgendered as they come. Like I'm a man with a beard. But I love the idea of like playing with that now, and I feel like I have a lot more agency around the way that people perceive me and the way that I kind of like present myself. But in general, especially being online and being like a queer person online, you are on the receiving end of toxic masculinity an awful lot in the terms of like men's rights activists, trolls, especially because I talk about politics and stuff.
Mm.
You end up with lots of people, like I get called fag every day. And that is, it's fine for me at the age of 28, but when I was younger, that was terrifying.
Yeah.
And like I see this the buzzword toxic masculinity like in my day-to-day life so much, and it worries me, which is why I was really bringing it back to the book, which is why I was actually really excited to read this book, because I think that is a huge problem, because we have the question and the symptom, but we haven't got the cure or the answer yet. And we need to figure out what the fucking answer is. Otherwise, we're going to continue electing Donald Trump. Yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. One good thing I do think is I think awareness is getting better.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
And I think long term,
as fuck, so we can start planting those seeds.
We are so woke.
Oh my god.
Yes.
And I think longer term, the outlook is brighter. I honestly believe it. Maybe I'm just an optimist, I think I do. I think the generation that follows us will grow up more aware to these things than we necessarily were.
Yeah, I mean, if you ignore, I don't know that. I don't think that that's true. Mm. I see the way that like Piers Morgan talks about trans, like the way that trans people, especially, and whenever there is a story about boys at school wearing dresses, there is such outrage and uproar and confusion and transphobia, and the fact that it's even a story in mainstream media, not even on Piers Morgan's Good Morning Britain, but on the BBC, the way that that stuff is talked about is incredibly dangerous, not just for trans people, but also in shaming young people who are perhaps, who should be experimenting with the way that they express their gender at younger ages, because then you're frankly you're less fucked up.
Yeah.
And I worry about what the way that we talk about gender now and the pushback that we're getting as certain parts of the community of our society are becoming more kind of like relaxed when it comes to gender expression. We're seeing the heteronormative, cisnormative kind of like old guard be like, oh no, we can't possibly change that because then everyone's going to start marrying vegetables.
Yeah, stupid, isn't it?
Do you know what I do think is quite interesting though, is actually being in the armed forces gives you an interesting perspective, because there's a very clear like sort of generational lines, because everyone sort of joins at the same age and moves up their careers at the same rate.
Yeah,
so everyone at certain levels, like a certain age, and you can see the difference between the like some of the you know people who've been in for like 15 years, 20 years, and their attitudes towards things like homosexuality, transgender people, compared to the people that joined around the same time as me, and their understanding of it. And it's an enormous difference. And what the good thing that I think about that is, a lot of the people that I meet there are young lads, you know, who should be reading this book. And their understanding of topics like that, broadly, is so much better than it was 15 years ago. And we just have to focus on making sure that that continues. And the generation that follow them are a little bit better. I think sometimes it's... sometimes it's like it'd be so good to just be able to like, here's the magic bullet and solve the problem. But it's just that creeping progress that ultimately we will get it.
Yeah.
As the younger generations grow up, maybe.
We're all going to be free.
And it's going to be beautiful and there'll be rainbows and flowers. And it'll be a happy utopia that we all live in.
So to conclude, we've got to bring it back to the book. We had a lovely conversation though. Would you have sex with this book? That's what we've been instructed to ask. Greg.
Jazza, I have had sex with this book and it's great.
Can you elaborate that in any way, shape or form? Or...
No, I just fine. Said it for the shock
good.
Factor.
Oh, right. It was good.
No, it was good. I would maybe consider it. Having sex with this book?
Great.
Is that a good enough answer?
You'd consider having... What would need to happen for you to have sex with it?
It would need to be more clear about its intentions.
Sure. Cool. Excellent. Dan, do you have sex with this book?
I would say, as the early stages were good, some mild foreplay.
bit of fondle.
Yeah, bit of mild bit of foreplay.
Mutual consent fondling.
Yeah, it really didn't get any further than that.
So this book I would definitely swipe right on Tinder for. but then I'd say, hey, sup, and they'd start talking. And I wouldn't ever meet up with them. That's how I stand. So no, I would probably... wouldn't have sex with this book unless they had a really hot torso pic.
Fair.
I'm weak.
Love a nice torso.
Oh, who doesn't? Right, very good.
Cool. Finished. Finish the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Also, thanks for editing, Future Hannah.
Thanks, Hannah.
Bye.
Dark outside.
See you later.
We'll see you at the pub in about 10 minutes.
Men.
Wow, wasn't that interesting?
Oh, we have no idea what they said. It's yeah,
I think it was really good.
Okay. The boys say like, it's really good. You can find Jazza and Craig on Twitter and on YouTube. We'll leave their links in the description to this episode. You can't find Dan anywhere. I'm sorry. Maybe Twitch, if he starts doing Twitch streams again. Thank you for listening. It is December. We are currently reading Carol. if you want to join in that good times.
We wish you a merry lesbian.
Lesbians at Christmas.
My favourite carol.
Oh my god, is that why it's called carol? Because it's like a Christmas carol.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh my god, Hannah.
I don't know, that's not a fact. Why would you think that's a fact?
And now
thanks
we know.
For listening. Do follow us on Twitter at Banging Book Club, where we tweet gifts about sex. The end.
If you are around in December in London, we are doing an event at Travelling Through, which is a bookshop in Waterloo. It's really cool and nice. There are a couple of tickets left. We will link that somewhere on our Twitter at Banging Book Club.
And yeah, your ticket price includes a book of the first book we're reading, which is The Power
by Naomi Alderman.
And some cocktails.
And some cocktails.
Pun based cocktails. Woo, woo, woo. Lucy will be doing a non alcoholic one.
Yeah.
She's a legend.
What can
Me
I
and
say?
Hannah will be drunk by the time we get there.
Before so, we get
much like our first live show.
Wow.
The best pitch I can give for that event.
Sounds great. Thank you again to our boyfriends and surrogate boyfriends for doing this mini-sode for us.
That's cool.
Who knows what they said? Can't wait to listen to it. Was it good, guys? Who knows?
Riveting.
Oh, no. Thanks for listening. Bye.
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 Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.